Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Happy Thursday evening.
Yes, we appreciate everybody joining us tonight, either on the live broadcast or in the archives. Glad to have you with us, those in the chat room as well. Tonight we'll be taking your calls. John Rossi is screening tonight, so if you'd like to call in and ask a question or make a comment, we'd love to hear from you. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also use that Skype button if you have a headset on your computer to call in. Tonight, we welcome back Morgan Bell. We had Morgan on the show, I checked it out, back in March of 2008. And Morgan, of course, is a paranormal researcher, investigator, MUFON field investigator. And tonight, we're going to be talking about UFOs. Welcome back, Morgan.
Oh, yeah. It's great to be back. It has been a while, hasn't it?
Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years. I mean, better than 2 years. Which leads me to the next point. Grant, we've been doing this show way too long, man.
Yeah, it has. You know, it seems like that sometimes. But, you know, we've known Morgan for a while now. We've co-investigated with him, and we participated in an investigation that he arranged down in Clewiston, which produced some really interesting results. So it's been too long, and it's always good talking to you. So welcome.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. It's always fun.
So, Morgan, you are the, let me make sure I get it right, the state, tell me what you are for MUFON.
Sure, absolutely. I'm sure most of your listeners probably know who MUFON is. If they don't, it's easy. Just go to MUFON.com and you can read up basically an international organization that researches through scientific means and methods the UFO phenomenon. And I joined about just over a year ago, and, you know, I've been serious in that subject matter for a long time prior, but I am the state section director for Southwest Florida. I'm also a part of the STAR team, investigation team, which is a kind of a special unit that used to be funded by Bigelow Aerospace, and since that program has, come and gone, but I got to experience a little bit in that as well. And they keep me busy, that's for sure. I've been probably on average about 5 to 6 cases a month, and that's still quite a bit for one investigator to handle.
You're traveling all over Southwest Florida?
Oh, yeah, everywhere from Pasco County. I've traveled down to the Keys, or close to the Keys, and spending a lot of time in Marco Island area as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, so that's great, man. I mean, of course, when, you know, a few years ago you were more into the ghost, or mainly into ghosts, at least, you know, outwardly. But
sure, yeah.
You know, but, like most of us, many of us, I should say, you have had an interest in UFOs. And, I mean, that was my first love, you know, growing up. I was what I was most interested in. I know, you know, Grant's really into them, too. So,
yeah.
Well, tell us about what's been going on in Florida.
There's quite a bit. When I first came on, I took on a few very strange cases that occurred up in Pasco County. Pasco County has had a history of this triangle that's been showing up whether it's a hoax or not, but we're still looking at it very closely. And
tell,
it was all over the news back.
Tell people where Pasco County is.
Pasco County is just north of Tampa Bay. So if you go north, it's the county right above Tampa. It's got Newport Richey there, basically, in that area. And then you go to Zephyr Hills out to the east. And in between, just at 75 and I think 54 is the intersection, the community has witnessed quite a few sightings of this triangle, like blue, you know, three lights that are attached to something that has been hovering over some homes. And they caught it on video twice, once in 08 and a different set of witnesses, totally unrelated to the first witness, again in 2009. And it was very interesting to see the videos and the correlation between the two. And we still haven't figured it out. A lot of the witnesses are still reluctant to really talk about it or come forward. They just wanted to make sure that it got recorded and the video was shared. And since then, I've been kind of following it. And then you come down this direction, and we just recently, this past early spring, we had nationwide, really, but in Florida quite a bit, sightings of these larger triangles, football size, very, very large deltoid and sometimes chevron-shaped craft. And I mean solid craft. They're not just seeing lights. They're seeing, actual infrastructure. Quite a few witnesses, a string of them, within a few months of each other. And as I looked, I did a comparative report on it and found that they were pretty much being seen all throughout the United States pretty much around the same time.
Wow.
And the good thing about the MUFON database that they have is that I'm able to access all the information and make any kind of comparative notes. And, I have to weed through a few of them, but for the most part, they were pretty right on with exactly what was being seen here in Florida. And then you come further south, and we're having some pretty major sightings in the Isles of Capri, which actually have been happening for years. All the way, I've got now informal reports of this strange object that's been seen coming out of the Gulf of Mexico and into the Isles of Capri area, where the Rookery Bay area is, where the preserve is, and it goes straight down. It goes down into the ground or the water. We haven't been able to discover where. But, it's a strange globe-like object that has lights going vertically and horizontally around it.
Hmm.
At different colors, horizontally, and the white lights, I believe, larger lights going vertically, with a strange light coming from the inside of this thing with, I'm trying to describe this thing the best I can. They described it as like stalactites hanging from the bottom and the top, and it would just move very slowly and methodically. And a couple times, the witnesses have seen it pretty up close. I have a boater that drove his boat underneath it.
Altitude?
He was saying 300-400 feet, not very high. Pretty close, maybe even less than that. But he was an experienced boater. He was in the military for a long time, so he was able to gauge what he saw. But he said his comment was to me is that I saw the same thing back in 1951 when I was out here. It's like I was out here doing boat tours and doing fishing, and I saw this exact object back in 1951, and now it's back. And he's been pretty reluctant and scared, really, to talk about his experience recently. And then I had another witness come forward and tell me about his experience with it last year, where he went out and got in his boat and chased it, drove towards it. And he went out to these mangroves where it had gone down between the trees. And he could see the light coming through the trees, so he got out and started walking into the mangroves. And I actually walked this area with him to verify the location that he was talking about. And he just remembers waking up the next day in his backyard with the boat kind of bouncing up against the sea wall. And he swore to me he wasn't drinking. his attitude is he's pretty scared about it. He doesn't know what to think about it. you know, and of course, all these witnesses are staying anonymous, and I totally agree with them. Some have come forward publicly. All you have to do is a Google search and just put Isles of Capri, you know, Florida UFO, and you'll get a ton of stories on it. And it's the reason why you're getting stories on it is because one of the writers for one of the local newspapers is one of the witnesses, and they had cataloged their eyewitness accounts to date, and it's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. The reporter, or was that Bill? I can't think of his last name. I know it, but I can't think of it. Up in Tampa area? Or is it?
Bill.
No, maybe.
Well, the one for Capri, it's the Naples Daily News, but the lady who's public about it is Ann Hall, is the reporter.
Okay. Yeah, a different
for that
person.
One.
Yeah. So let's talk for a moment about these witnesses' fear. You know, what's mm-hmm. driving that fear in reporting or coming forward,
well,
I think?
Yeah, and you're right. I wouldn't call it like an inherent fear or, you know, a fear of evil or anything like that. Everybody that I've talked to in this phenomenon, and it's a lot of people in the last just 1 year, if I were to tell anybody, if you want to learn anything about this phenomenon, is join an organization like MUFON and take on all the cases, and then you'll learn real quick.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that this fear comes from just an unknown. They don't know anything. In fact, the witness that I was speaking about doesn't remember anything, and that's what scares him the most, because he doesn't know what's happening. It's the fear of the unknown. You know, the typical things that we deal with also in the paranormal investigation.
Have you had any more incidents of missing time with your clients?
That one in particular has had multiple experiences. One
so that wasn't
in particular.
His first time.
No. In fact, that was the catalyst. That's where it started, I think. And then later this year he had it again, but he wasn't chasing it or anything. He was just doing his normal deal, and then he woke up one day in his house, I think, in his chair, and it was 3 weeks later. He said, I know that sounds far-fetched, but
yeah.
The guy was saying, look, I'm not here to convince you. And he's like, that's what I observed, because the only thing I remember was getting up and my dog was outside trying to get in. And, I think it's a lot of, in talking in depth with these witnesses, it's a lot about the unknown. They're just fearful because they don't know why, what, or who, or how. And, you know, the few people that have had experiences where they remember what they've seen and heard, it's still that same fear. They don't really fear the objects, the things. It's scary to them because they don't know anything.
They don't
know
remember.
About them. Yeah,
they don't
remember
what happened to them.
Right.
Just if we could just digress for a second.
Sure.
Was the vehicle that this guy saw one of the triangles, Morgan, or,
no.
or did he see a different configuration?
This is a very strange object. Just a light, really, at first. But then a few witnesses have seen it up close. And I don't know if there's a hoaxer going along with the news stories. I mean, there's been a lot of false reports as well. But for the most part, it's a globe-like object with very brilliant lighting in the interior and the exterior, and some strange structural characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like the triangles.
Mm-hmm.
The witnesses with the triangles don't have missing time. They don't remember being abducted. They don't remember anything like that.
Yeah.
They just remember seeing it, and that was it. Yeah, this is something different.
And where was that located? He was in Pasco.
No, this light, all the ones that I'm talking about with the light and the strange globe have been in the Isles of Capri, which is just north of Micro Island, which is south of Naples.
Okay.
Yeah, out over the Gulf of Mexico. The triangle were primarily seen up in Pasco.
Okay.
But throughout Florida, really. And
What do you think about the hypothesis that those triangles may be some type of surveillance by our own Air Force?
Yeah, I've heard that quite a bit, not only from just people theorizing, but also people that have been in the military and that have been part of some of the Black Op Howard projects, not really, you know, full in, probably more or less as a contractor. But, you know, there was always talk about the TRB-3, or if I can say it right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah. And you know what makes me wonder about that, too? When you when you alluded to Bigelow, I can't recall what his first name is,
yeah,
who is into aerospace and is doing some, yeah, doing some really interesting stuff. And one of the big things that he's been working on, as I'm sure you're aware of, are inflatable cargo containers in space. And, you know, they've had some success. And so they're now, as the commercialization of space, they want to get it up and running. This guy is a big guy in the space industry for privatization of space.
Yep.
So it makes me wonder, when you think about that type of fabric that he's working on that can take the rigors of space, and then, you know, maybe he's affiliated, obviously he's affiliated with the government.
Now he is, yeah.
You know what's going on? But he was also kind of out on the fringe guy, because he funded a lot of paranormal research at one time.
Yeah, quite a bit. He's funded everybody, the UFO Reporting Center, a few other types of research organizations, and then his final thing was with MUFON. And, you know, it's true. You got to think of that. As far as what I could tell is that Bigelow himself, you know, obviously he was a big real estate tycoon in Vegas, in that area, in Arizona. And he's put a whole thing together as far as Bigelow Aerospace and researching this subject matter. And their involvement was, what's the right word, with MUFON. They weren't really involved, but they were kind of like, they would benefit from our research, but that's about as far as it went.
Mm-hmm.
They benefit from our collection of data, and that's basically all their relationship was with us. You know, I'd get a call every now and then from them, and I'd talk to their investigators, and they're all engineers, scientists. Some of them are just field engineers, that are in various fields of science. And what they're doing, I think, is just trying to compile, you know, characteristic data and theories to try to develop.
Well, I thought it was pretty ingenious, the whole thought of an inflatable spacecraft. And, you know, I think that's what, I mean, when you look at the
you know where he got that?
No.
He got that idea, and I read this, or I talked to one of the guys about it, he got it from one of NASA's, you know, they kind of let some of these things go as far as their rights to technology. What do they call it?
Think tank or something.
Yeah, their patents, and they let all these patents go, and they started reading through these patents, and they couldn't believe what they were reading. They were saying, "Why didn't they do any of this stuff? They just held on to these things." And as soon as some of the employees at NASA just forgot to update their patents, they would snipe them away, and they would take them, and they would develop them and improve them. And that was one of them, was this inflatable cargo holder. And
it's a great idea, you know, and it's so practical. You know, I mean, like, if and when we return to the moon, they're going to be part of it because they can cover it up with the lunar soil. It's just the possibilities are endless.
And we're not talking about
like regular balloons. We're talking like the strength of Kevlar, the same thing they make.
Yeah, it's almost faster. More. And they utilize the Kevlar, but they also utilize this new spray foam material that is stronger than Kevlar. And it's really cool.
Well, Morgan, this fellow down in the Isles of Capri, did he ever have any regression work done?
Not yet. He's not interested in that. I talked to him about it. MUFON is right now in developing a program to make sure that the people that are in regression are licensed, through certain avenues, I guess, and they're coming up with a standard right now in MUFON. And we already have a few people that are licensed, that are recognized by, you know, several boards. And, you know, that is one of the processes if the investigative processes, I shouldn't say scientific, but it is part of our investigative process. You know, we do let them know that that's an option. And, you know, a lot of times, to be honest, they don't want to know. A lot of them say, you know, I've had enough. I don't want to remember. I'll be ready when I'm ready, and I'll let you know. And it's been a few people. There's another interesting case, the Pasco County case, is one of the ones where the guy had witnessed many things through his life. And very strange experience. And this is one of the good parts about being a MUFON. I love it because I get to meet a lot of these neat people. Is this gentleman, and I won't give his name out, but he's an inventor. He's self-educated. He's had these strange experiences of possibly abduction experiences through his entire life. I mean, he remembers something as a child. You know, he used to call them Eskimos, you know. That's what his description of those were, these visitors that came to his room at night. But later on, he had all these collaborating experiences with friends and family. One was when he was recently, several years ago, actually, it was diving up along the west coast of Florida and coming back with his buddy and the boat trailer and everything back down 19, going back down towards Newport Richey. And they saw this top hat thing that was, like, really bright, you know, like a welder's glow, like so bright it was hard to look at. And they pulled over and they got out and started watching this thing. And they noticed it went down into this little opening, and they started walking down towards it, and they, you know, they were watching it near the ground, and then they just got this urge, you know, weird urge, you know, to just go get back in the truck, and they drove off. And they remember every bit of it, but they don't know why they did it.
Hmm.
And, in fact, their memories didn't trigger until a couple of days later, like, why aren't we talking about this, you know? It was very strange. Another time was when he was out with his neighbor outside just putting the trash out for the next day, and this green thing looking like a horseshoe crab came flying over. I say horseshoe crab because it's the shape it was in. You know, came through, and it just seemed to not really fly. It just kind of went, you know, and it was very jagged in its movement and kind of just fluttered across them. And they both had dermal toughening in their skull around the top of their heads, and they had doctors examine it, and I talked to the neighbor as well, and they had it in it, and they, you know, the doctors couldn't explain it. They just said that you got burned somehow, and you had dermal toughening of your skin, and they had these little white tough portions of their head that they had removed, you know, things like that. He woke up in his bed with sand. you know, that kind of thing, yeah. And he's never been formally educated, but the guy's a genius.
Hmm.
He's invented, and he's worked for some major, major companies, NASA, you know, Bayer, to mention, is one of them, and JPL. He's done development for things like that.
Wow.
So, and, you know, he still now does things just as minor as, you know, inventing things like you know, a good ant killer for the yard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's been very successful at it. He's very intelligent, and, you know, he's very credible.
So the sightings that you're seeing out in Pasco County, Morgan, are they like in the city, or are they out? Because it can get real rural out there.
It can. The two separate sightings, but one that he had was out over the water, where they saw these chevron-shaped, consecutive shapes, three of them, each one about half the size as the one in front of it, they think lifted out of the water because they can see kind of like a brownish color to it, and it was like it was falling off of it, and it was going, you know, they didn't really think of it. They both, him and his wife, both witnessed it, and they only noticed it because they thought it was a flock of birds, and then they looked at it closer through the binoculars, and they couldn't believe what they saw. And then a separate sighting pretty close to that one, you know, the one that occurred back in 08, which is out over 54 and 75 in Pasco County, which is, you know, out there over 75, which is kind of rural. There's a little bit of development out there, and that's where the people saw it, and several different witnesses, different video. And all you have to do is put Pasco County UFO or Triangle in YouTube, and you'll find all the videos on it. It made headlines again, too, back in 08 and 09. So
that's cool.
Very strange.
Where's McDill in relationship to Pasco County?
Right, McDill, I believe, is out towards the center. And then you have the large one that is along the Panhandle, which is England.
Oh, Eglin, yes, that's right. Yep.
And a lot of the triangles, and I'm sitting here looking at my map on the wall with all the little, you know, pinhole things on it, and the black ones I have marked on there is where these recent, the last 2 years of these triangles that have been seen. And, of course, the populated areas are always marked because, you know, that would just make sense statistically that more people are there, the more chance that they'll report a UFO to MUFON. I like using the ratio of out of every probably 10, and this is probably being a little liberal, but out of every 10, one person reports the UFO to MUFON. And that's probably more than that actually. But we've noticed that they've stuck to trajectories. Like when people notice them, we always mark, you know, what direction they go in and where they're heading. And they seem to correlate a lot either with coastlines or central areas, like they're going from base to base, like they're, you know, hopscotching. And I know our state director holds the theory that it's probably military. Very similar, and it's actually the same thing that people have seen, you know, the big famous one, the Arizona, the Arizona lights that everybody talks about. The same object, this big chevron black shape, was seen. And you guys have all seen the video, right? The one they show on CNN all the time when they talk up about it. Well, you got to remember, that video, and I don't know why the media keeps doing it, even though it's been explained to them, that video was taken far after the actual sighting occurred. And that actually is what it is. It's flares. But the sighting actually occurred, you know, about an hour and a half prior to the release of those flares. And I'm actually related to one of the individuals that's involved in the 175th when they actually, you know, did drop the flares. And, you know, they said, yeah, we were ordered, you know, that's what we do before we land. And I said, well, it's kind of peculiar that it happened very close to the sighting. And it's not an explanation for the sighting, because the sighting actually happened, you know, almost daylight. It was just as the sun went down. And people could actually see the object itself. And then all of a sudden, you know, here's some flares right over near the city. Was it ordered to do on purpose? You know, we'll never know. And I know John McCain and the mayor at the time, or the governor, never got answers about what was over their city. And then later on they came out with an explanation that it was the 175th dropping air flares, but, you know, the investigation was already done by MUFON and a few others.
They were not consistent with aerial flares at all. Well, especially some of the videos where it you can tell that it's part, those lights are attached to a gigantic structure.
And I would have to disagree, because I've even had my father, who's an avid, you know, he was an Air Force pilot, and says, yeah, that A-10s do drop these targeting flares, which do that. But the thing is the most interesting thing about the case, and there's a lot of documentaries on it now, where they say, look, you know, this is where the media and the military are trying to explain something away that had nothing to do with the actual sighting. The video that was shot almost 2 hours after the actual mass sighting occurred. And I know MUFON and everybody's been trying to stress is, like, don't pay attention to that, because we've been able to prove that that's flares, and we already know that it was, because we've been, you know, they had independent witnesses that were closer to the event. But then the actual event, where lots of people actually saw this huge chevron shape, were saying, no, we didn't see lights like that, and that wasn't it. We saw this thing over our house, over our development. Even the governor himself had come out and said, look, the thing's giant, and I was close enough to where I think if I threw a rock at it, I'd hit it.
Well, and it blots out the stars a lot of times, a lot of the witnesses say.
That wasn't even a factor in this one. It was like it was there. It was like it was just sunset. The light had just started to go down. You know, the sun was just not visible below the horizon. And this thing was there. It had lights on it, yes, but it wasn't a string of lights. It wasn't blocking out anything. It was a solid, you know, object that you could see plain as day. And that's where a lot of the witnesses got really frustrated with the media, because they kept trying to show this video and talk about the 8 o'clock sightings and things like that, when all the reports came into the fire departments and there were police at about 7:30. And, you know, it's it was kind of frustrating because it kind of shows you the influence and the impact that the media can have on a situation where there's the facts are stranger than the fiction that's being made up about it. And it's just, you know, but it was an incredible sighting. We had a lot of good witnesses for that one. And, you know, even the governor came forward and kind of apologized for that whole thing that he did for the press conference.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, a lot of people.
The sad part is the media is the enemy of the truth.
A lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of times.
A lot of people think that the common video that they show with the Phoenix Lights is what mm-hmm. the sighting was, but that's what you're saying is
yeah.
the actual sighting
it's
was
not,
an hour and a half or so earlier, and they to my knowledge, we don't really have any video of that, right?
No. No, yeah. no one really, you know, took video. It happened so quickly. You know, like the lady, one of the witnesses said, you know, I didn't think of my camera at the time. I was just like trying to figure out in my head, you know, a lot of these people were just totally taken back at what they were seeing because it was so huge. I mean, it almost, it's hard to conceive. A lot of people say it does no justice.
Well, that kind of conflicts with our concept of reality, and I think that
oh, yeah.
one could say that's earth-shaking. Or some real paradigms change when you see something like that.
Well, if
sure.
you, if our listeners have any questions, Morgan has all the answers. And so just give us a call on our number there on your screen. There is a question from the chat room, and the question is, have you cross-referenced magnetic anomalies with sightings?
I've tried that. I think to utilize that type of technology, you need something far more sensitive than what's sold over the counter. I'm working with a few people that are, well, not just one, but two, but that have ideas and have constructed items that can do pretty good sensitive work with electromagnetic pulse detection, you know, passive radio signals. I mean, they're doing it now by tracking meteorites into our atmosphere. There's a program now going on with some independent investigators that are putting together kind of some funding to build these passive radar systems throughout the United States to be able to track fast-moving objects that emit, you know, a lot of power. I mean, and kind of, and you can actually do trajectory, time, speed, everything with those things. And you can pretty much tell the difference by the data by, you know, looking at what a meteorite looks like and versus what an object may be doing. And they've even done studies, and a few have been leaked to the public where they were tracking, you know, an object that would stop in the middle of the country and then just 90-degree turn, you know, going several thousand miles per hour. Passive radio seems to be one of the main technologies. And, yeah, electromagnetics is definitely a big factor because if you're dealing with a pretty hefty power source, you're going to have some effects on the electromagnetic field for sure.
Yeah, interesting. So so those are some of the cases that you've done. Have there been any others that have been rather fascinating?
Any high strangeness cases?
Yeah.
I did work on one. If you're aware of it or not, up in this area, dealing with what's called the Northport.
Yeah, that's
is,
what I was gonna ask you about.
Yeah, the Northport Devil case. Well, the guy calls it the Northport Devil. That's kind of how he started marketing his idea. But you know, I was there from the beginning. He has his videos of me up there on his YouTube now and everything like that. But it was a legitimate case at first. The son was the experiencer. He's had some strange experiences, you know, in California, and then they moved from California to Florida with his father. And they called us because he saw one of these things at his window. It was a gray, very large, tall gray that was probably around 9 to 8 feet tall. He showed me where its head was at the window and everything. He gave me really good detail, and you can tell he was being pretty honest about what he saw. He also saw in the background up in a tree this thing hanging onto a tree that was behind the gray. It was unlike the gray. It had, I guess, like padded skin. It looked like a heart-shaped head, if that makes any sense, with kind of same type of eye configuration, you know. had, you know, obviously some sort of claws or some sort of grasping appendages that was kind of just sitting up there. The father never saw it. He claims he never saw it during that time. He recalled going out the back door and, you know, and scaring this thing away. And it just, he said it just went into the trees, no other sound. It just kind of, you can hear hitting branches up in the top of the trees, and it just went. And the next day he came out to look, and there was this footprint. And he casted the footprint and had it examined by a wildlife specialist, and they couldn't figure it out. And they said, if it were real, I don't know what it is. It's pretty much the comment I got. And from there, it kind of got strange. The guy had met with some other investigators and some people in the field with different theories and religious theories, and he got into starting to make up stories about seeing these 9, 10, 11, 12-foot giant red dragons. And, you know, he suspected that his neighbor was a dragon, you know, that was turned into
a
dragon.
That's right. And, I remember, and I'm thinking, oh, God.
Yeah, and it kind of went downhill from there. And it's nothing private to him or anybody else. He did admit publicly that he had a little bit of issues with PTSD and from Vietnam. But you know, I kind of figured that. But the son, you know, his story never changed. It was always the same. And unfortunately, we had to cut ties with the case because it did get kind of out of hand and somewhat violent. With the father, you know, in verbs, not necessarily physically, but you know, they started barricading their house, or the father, and putting weapons on walls and things like that. And it just, you know, we didn't want to have any part of it. And,
I don't blame you.
Parted ways. I hesitated, but I don't doubt the son's story because he never changed the story, you know what I mean? Every time I asked the same question, he would stick with the same thing every time. And it was benign. It wasn't really all exciting and crazy and new. It was just, you know, this is what happened. But the father's stories, of course, evolved more and changed and became a lot more fantastic. And it just got out of hand, and so we had to kind of back away, unfortunately. And he's a minor, so there's really not much I could do independently with him. So it's just what it is.
You know, that's how old was the son?
At the time, I believe he was 16.
And that's been, what, a year or two ago?
About a year, almost a year.
About a year.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So he's getting to the age where he can split.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very strange, and I learned more about their private lives than I really wanted to know, and just, you know, it's just something I just had to get away from, and everybody else concurred, including my state director, who pretty much took it out of my hands at that point because I didn't want to have anything to do with it. So
on the matter of polygraphs, there's a question in the chat room. If a MUFON client refuses a polygraph or other mm-hmm. type of testing, do you still work with them?
Absolutely. There's no restrictions on you know how much I talk with a witness. That is only voluntary type of investigative procedure, and not always necessary. Most of the cases that I deal with, we take data, we collect it, and we make a conclusion based off of what we have, and leave it in the database. You know, in case we need to use it later. Maybe there's another case that pops up, and we'll compare and make a comparative mm-hmm. analysis. But we only would prefer to do a major case with that type of technique. It's expensive for one thing. And another thing is it's only necessary when it's a really large, very public case. And
right.
when you're trying to prove the case, you know, using a few, you know, legal methods of, you know, proving your witness is always helpful. But no, it's not a requirement at all.
Cool. So what, trying to think of some things that would be of value to the listeners. Let me ask you this.
You can ask me anything.
Pardon me?
Yeah, you can ask me anything. So don't feel uncomfortable.
Well, no, that's not what I'm worried about. Let me ask you this, though. Have you, because you investigate really a variety of forms of anomalous phenomena, have you noticed any overlaps? Have you noticed any of the same types of phenomena, both in ufology and also in the haunting world?
Yeah, I guess I could say that. There's been a few cases in Florida that...
Could you repeat that one more time, Morgan? You kind of blinked out.
Yeah, there sure have been. And the reason why I say that is the group that I work with here in Southwest Florida, the SWFAI,
mm-hmm.
We've had some... Where you can make that comparison is when people have these experiences in their homes where they, you know, they think there's a ghost or they see a shadow person or, you know, they remember somebody standing around them when they were waking up or, you know, having waking dreams issues or missing time, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's two camps. You know, some people are going to drive themselves to saying that it's a ghost, and some people will drive themselves to saying it's an alien.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of crisscrossy at that point. You know, one could theorize that shadow people are really just cloaked aliens for all we know. But again, it's one of those deals where that's usually the local areas where it overlaps is when it's in the home and it's more intimate of an experience.
So the phenomena is filtered through the lens of their belief system.
Yeah, very much so.
Have there been any accounts of psychokinesis or PK events like in abduction cases that are reminiscent of haunting cases?
Yeah, one gentleman that I talked to, he remembers having conversations during his experience, and he just remembers not saying anything, but thinking it and having this conversation with the beings, I guess.
Hmm.
And it kind of was all in his head. You know, that's why he was kind of foggy. He didn't remember anything, but he just remembers having a conversation back and forth, but never opening his mouth. And I guess that would be one kind of an example. And then, you know, nothing really with movement of objects or anything like that. But primarily, you know, the telekinesis type thing where people are either communicating or moving objects, but primarily communicating without vocals.
Hmm.
So it's strange. I know one case, it was another gentleman too who called me out of nowhere. I guess he saw my information in the newspaper article, and you know, he came right out and said, "Look, I know this is strange, but I'm going to tell you right now." He's like, "I think I'm a hybrid." So I'm like, you know, especially when I hear that, I'm just like, "Oh, okay, yeah, I know where this is going." So, but I listened to him. You know, I was being fair, and you know, he really had a really good story. And he had a lot to back it up. You know, he was Air Force for a long time. He worked in radar engineering, and eventually on a major project dealing with I don't want to give too much away because he's kind of incompetent.
Sure.
But a satellite project where they were measuring gamma rays, and that was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had. And he was saying, not many people know about this, but there's a satellite that was measuring gamma rays, and they were able to track interstellar aircraft or craft of some sort. And I said, really? How can you explain? And he gave me all the names, he gave me all the players and all the people that were involved, including himself and what position he was in. And they concluded his group, who was part of one of the military branches, there was military branches and universities and private branches that were involved in analyzing the data. And they kind of discovered that these gamma rays that they were detecting were not just all black holes and quasars, which they were looking for, that they found out that they were actually connecting dots. And these things were moving in straight lines, and they were blasting these gamma waves would hit Earth every so often in increments, and one would actually pass Earth, and when it got the closest point to Earth, it bombarded Earth with this gamma wave. Yeah, and they measured it. They tried to take in the data. It was too much data. It gave their systems way too much data that the satellite, basically it's a telescope that reads gamma rays, and they couldn't take all the, it basically filled their data bank and they had to download it all, but they couldn't make sense of it. And then, and the strangest thing is that he told me, he's like, then Earth, something somewhere on Earth, a gamma ray got sent back out, and, you know, at this object. So it was almost like they were using something here on Earth as a ping or some sort of navigation.
Is
and,
it,
when,
could it be a carrier? Carrier wave?
Yeah, I mean, they think, well, no, they said it was emitted. It was stronger. It was different data. It was something totally different.
Were they using the gamma wave to, as were they modulating the gamma wave? I mean, like a radio wave to carry information?
Yeah, his theory was his whole crew basically was saying that the propulsion being used was emitting gamma ray radiation, which is one of the strongest right now in the universe as far as power outlet. You know, you have your quasars and your black holes, which emit these gamma rays. So those things are pretty powerful. I imagine whatever power source is being used here would be using this very powerful power source. And they believe that it was kind of both, and it's propulsion. And then he theorized that the gamma ray, you know, waves were being used as modulated communication. And it would be a lot more effective than radio waves. It would actually be, you know, the theory. And I've talked to, you know, a guy that was pretty knowledgeable in this, he's pretty much into physics. The guy that I talked to you about earlier, he's real intelligent. He started telling me that, well, there's a theory that if using gamma ray type energy sources, that you have a potential of, you know, screwing with physics, and you could literally go faster than the speed of light. So, in theory, you could probably send a signal and data and information faster than the speed of light by using gamma rays.
Wow.
He said it's new science, but, you know, they're still looking at it. I mean, if you can manipulate gravity, time, and space, you can manipulate speed. he said that the other gentleman, the witness I was telling you about, said that, you know, they had to produce a report, which they did, and when we did, you know, the guy agreed with him, one of the head scientists of the program, but he said, you know, to keep our funding, we're going to have to change your conclusion. And he said, you're not the only one that came up with this, or, you know, we agree with it. But then, and then shortly after that, that satellite was scuttled because, you know, something happened and it fell into Earth's atmosphere.
Wow.
Whoops.
Yeah,
and,
whoops.
and now recently the European Space Agency has put up a gamma ray detector, and now they're doing the same studies. So who knows what they're going to find with it.
Have you ever had
an
opportunity to see a UFO?
Myself, no. I'm looking.
Yeah.
But I take it back. I've seen some strange things. You know, again, a lot of things that people see is explainable, or misidentifications, I should say. But you know, I think I've seen some strange things dealing with satellite-like objects where they were moving radically, where they shouldn't have been, you know, stopping, going a different direction, and just normal movement. But you know, why would a satellite be doing this way up there? you know, that was when I was a child. But, you know, as far as anything, no, not really. But I am looking. I've got a lot more equipment now than I can carry. So I'm working on it.
Well, with as many Air Force bases here in Florida, you'd think that there'd be a lot of traffic up there. And if they're trying out new aircraft or new designs or stealth designs, they might be trying it out over water. You know, one never knows.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because you got a lot of different Air Force bases here and naval bases, and it might make sense.
Well, that's what happened. During these mass sightings of all these triangles, people started asking questions. One of our investigators, this is what was peculiar, during that time period, we were all trying to figure out what was going on. She calls, you know, one of the bases nearby and asks, you know, because one day during her sighting that she had, was assigned up in Tampa, she found that, you know, there may have been something correlating with these C-5s that were flying over. And she tried to find out the origin of these huge airplanes, these transport airplanes. And she called the base, and they said, oh, that's not ours. I said, wait a minute. It looked like it was on approach to your base. Well, no, we didn't have anything in the air. You know, and then a few days later, there was this national announcement on Fox News that in the southeast of the United States, they are performing large exercise, airport exercises. You know, you're going to be hearing sonic booms and, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff like that.
Not and, that I think for a minute that Homeland Security might spy on us now.
You know.
Because we know they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't spy on their own population.
So what we have, you know, we can only theorize is that there may be some pursuits, to say the least, going on during that time because of all the reports. And if we were seeing things, if people, our witnesses, were seeing things, you know the Air Force was seeing these things. And more than likely, they were reacting to what was going on and moving equipment and probably flying in equipment with the CF-5s. Probably were denying, you know, the movement of that, those large airplanes. So just to, you know, cover their tracks like any good military would do.
And I know that this will ring true with you, Morgan, is that, you know, back in the early 1960s, because what I'm about to say doesn't mean that I rule out the fact that there may be something as extraterrestrial involved in the sighting.
Sure.
But back in the 60s, when they were developing the U-2 spy plane, you know, people reported it. It was a high-flying object. It was like 60, 70, maybe even higher. And the CIA and the other various intelligence agencies just let it go with it, you know. And the downside, and I think what you were talking about before, where I said the media is really our enemy when you talk about UFO reports, and I think this is something that has plagued the whole UFO community since we started,
sure.
you know, investigating, is that the UFO makes us look like we're all the UFO reports are laughable. It's like tongue-in-cheek. There they go again. They're so out there. You know, come on, folks.
Oh, yeah.
And what a better cover if you can make people laugh about it.
Graphic. Cows and flying.
Yeah.
What if cows have anything?
So they ridicule it and make everybody think, you know, that, oh, it's not possible. But, you know, that whole paradigm is going to have to change pretty soon because, you know, just recently they said, the scientists said, pretty much came out and said, there's like 144, you know, a thousand, I mean, I can't remember, maybe within I don't know, so many light years of here, there may be
sure.
hundreds of Earths, you know,
what?
And I mean, yeah, this was,
oh, yeah,
this,
it,
you know, now, Earth-type planet doesn't mean exactly like ours, but, you know,
right.
similar size and, you know.
Goldilocks zone.
Yeah, in a general area like that, so,
yeah.
you know, that's pretty mind-boggling, so.
Well, I have a question for you, Morgan.
Have
you had anybody report sightings of a number of craft flying in formation?
Yes. Actually, during the 4th of July, I should say not, I just say that because it's around that holiday, but before and after, we had a, now I would go ahead and say flares, usually, at this point, but, there's a big but here, we had multiple sightings of strings of just groups of large, you know, lantern-type lights, these orange, bright, you know, lights that are up in the sky. Typically, you know, Chinese lanterns or 4th of July, you know, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. You would think that. Or you would think military flares. Well, the fact that they happened over almost every major city in Florida, we had reports from Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Tampa, Fort Myers. We had a string where the guy described, you know, these lights that were just kind of traveling east at the time against the wind patterns. It was just kind of strange. About 50 of them just hanging
wow.
out and kind of going east. And, you know, just normal speed, nothing that unusual. Another one up in Sarasota near the water. I mean, it was happening all over the place. Now, at first, if it was one sighting, one witness, I would say that it's a likelihood that it was probably military flares or an exercise, because I've seen those, and that's kind of what they look like. But the fact that, you know, the military doesn't do exercises over major areas all at one time, unless they're trying to do something. But, you know, it was kind of strange, and that was really unique, and we have no explanation for it.
Well, a couple of years ago, I was in the greater Denver area doing a UFO investigation, which you're probably aware of, and you know, Paranexus was involved in it. I know MUFON's been involved with it at least probably twice. with the same case.
It's a mountain bird, right?
Pardon?
Is it that ranch?
No, not the ranch. It's an individual, an abductee. I'm not going to bring up his name, even though
it's public
stuff. You know, I mean, I just don't want to get into that part of it. I'm just saying that's where I was when I had this experience. And several of us saw this all at once. We were out in the backyard taking a break, and it was about 10:15 at night, clear night. It was right around the 1st of June, so it was rather warm. And one of the investigators, you know, we were all kind of just sitting back looking up and, you know, talking and chatting. One of the investigators says, look. And we all looked up, and there was a staggered V formation of about seven of these lights flying very high. And I'm guesstimating now. It's really difficult to tell altitude. But I'm guesstimating somewhere in the, I don't know, 25,000, 30,000 foot range, and I'm using as a reference for all of these, I'm using commercial airliners as a reference to base some of this stuff on, and so they're going very quickly, and based on my own observation of commercial airliners flying, you know, across the sky from horizon to horizon, we didn't have a horizon to horizon view, but in the view that we had, I estimated their speed to be somewhere in the, you know, about 10 times faster than a commercial airliner. And they fly typically at about 500 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So I'm guesstimating somewhere in the 4,000 to 5,000 mile per hour range. There was no sonic boom. There was no sound. They were kind of a light blue, and they looked almost like little dashes, you know, but they were all in a staggered V formation flying very fast. Any reports like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Arizona was a big one where a gentleman had, and not my case, I just followed it, where he actually filmed it with a little setup that I have myself, which is using a monoscope night vision camera hooked up to a miniature DVR.
Uh-huh.
And he basically followed, he looks at satellites a lot. He tries to follow things, weird objects, he tries to see things. He films a lot of satellites, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But then here comes this staggered V formation, like you would normally see a fighter formation, you know, and with a one, you know, one jet that staggers behind, which is your typical V formation for fighters,
right.
And it was very high. I mean, extraordinarily high up there. I mean, in one of the shots, you could see a satellite literally go right under them.
Wow.
So these things were pretty high up.
Fast.
The guy said, "Oh, here comes the satellite." It just happened to be a satellite coming by. And
fast walkers, or whatever they call them. Or...
Yeah. And these things were in your standard, you know, staggered V formation, flying at extraordinarily high altitude, which, you know, you could say, you know, what's going on here? You know, well, is it military or is it not? Or what is it? Or what do they have now, you know? And so there's a possibility that they could be utilizing some sort of super orbit of some sort.
I don't know. It's pretty fast.
It's very difficult to say. And they're going very fast. Yeah, they're going from horizon to horizon probably within less than a minute.
Well, what? They theorized that if Aurora existed, it was doing at least Mach 5. Mach 5 to Mach 7.
Which is still slower
than... And if they're using now, you know, unconventional propulsion or whatever, then you wouldn't hear a sound at boom. You wouldn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And if they're in orbit, if they're out of our atmosphere, there wouldn't be a super. There wouldn't be any noise. You wouldn't hear it. And so it's very neat, very very interesting case. And it's actually online. You can go to YouTube and see that video.
I'll tell you what, we are running out of time, but it's been a great conversation and very, very interesting stuff. Morgan, you know, we always appreciate talking with you, appreciate your objective and scientific approach. Thanks so much for being on with us tonight.
Absolutely.
And if you'll hang on with us just a moment, next week we have Bill Sweet coming to talk about consciousness and the trickster and some different things like that. Should be a very interesting show next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And also, don't forget, this coming Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, Informal Paranormal with John Rossi and Mike Jones. And we'll have some more remote viewing experiments on that show as well. We do appreciate everybody listening. Thanks for taking your time with us, those who are listening live and those on the archive. And Grant, another great show, and we wish
you. Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure having Morgan with us.
Oh, yeah.
All right, everybody. Have a great night. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Have a great weekend, everybody.